Hi, and welcome to the Jordan Kinda Knows Something show, where I'll be talking about health, fitness, life, and anything else I kinda know something about.
And then again, the immune system and cardiovascular health, it's all relating back to these microbes and their role in our overall picture of health. So the greatest predictor of a healthy microbiome is the diversity of plant seaweed. And so we're starting to uncover that this, you know, grouping of bacteria, these trillions of bacteria, and most of them again are in the gut, they interact with the food that we eat and they actually help us break it down.
Why, hello there, everyone, and welcome to the very first episode of the Plant-Based Strong series. I am so excited to release this series to you all and to get everybody's stories on being plant-based and being vegan. Now, I know I've mentioned it a few times in my previous few episodes. This series is going to be for everyone, not just for people that are plant-based. It is just going to essentially be a showcase of various aspects of a plant-based diet, of being vegan, and just showcasing athletes, showcasing people who specialize in gut health, and someone who is a doctor kind of taking their perspective, bodybuilders, just kind of a little bit of everything and how anyone and everyone can be plant-based. Now, this is not going to be a pushy series or anything like that. I am not making this to say you have to go vegan or you have to go plant-based. I am simply making this to showcase how people are thriving and the reasons why people have decided to go plant-based. And if it helps you make a decision to go plant-based or to simply just eat more plants in your diet, then cool. If not, then I mean, hopefully you just enjoy this series anyways. So that's essentially the intention of this series. It's, again, not going to be a pushy series or anything like that. It's not going to be one of those, oh, go vegan, blah, blah, blah series. No, not at all. It's just kind of having fun. So again, there are going to be 6 episodes to this series. I'm going to be posting each episode weekly. Oh, actually, that's a lie. There's going to be 7 episodes because the 7th is going to be me. So it is going to be my very first solo episode. I mean, if you've listened to this podcast at the beginning in February, you know that all of the first 10 episodes were me solo episodes. They are not live anymore. Just because, I mean, when I first started the podcast, I didn't have a mic or anything, so the quality in those episodes are so bad. But anyways, this is going to be officially my first solo episode since then. It's going to be my solo episode since, I guess, the last 12 episodes have been interviews with other people. So I am essentially going to share my journey with being plant-based and kind of going vegan. So that will be kind of at the end of the series. I am first going to let everybody else talk and I'm going to let other people share their journeys about being plant-based and offering advice about being plant-based. And then I will share my journey at the end. But for today's episode, I am going to be talking with Rosalyn. Now, Rosalyn is a holistic nutritionist based out of Vancouver, BC. She specializes in gut health. Now, gut health is something that I've always been so interested in. It is something that I see everywhere now. Like, you know, you see in the supermarkets things about gut health on the shelves. You see probiotics everywhere. You see on Instagram people talking about working on their gut health and this and that. And I've always been interested in gut health. It was something that I worked on a little tiny bit in the past because I was having a lot of digestion issues and issues with my skin. So I saw a holistic nutritionist and they recommended a few things and it helped me. But I wasn't really educated before this episode even on essentially what gut health is, various ways you can help your gut health, and essentially what gut health kind of affects around your body. So Rosalyn kind of talks with us all about that, and it is a super informative and fun episode. I hope you all enjoy it. Let's get into it. Alrighty. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. And welcome, Rosalyn, to the show. How are you doing today?
Hi. Thank you so much for having me, Jordan. This is awesome. I'm so excited to be on the show.
Oh, no worries. I'm so happy that you're on the show, especially for this plant-based series, to kind of talk about the gut. I know, like, for me, I've been interested in gut health for so long, but I know there's people listening out there like myself who are still a little bit uneducated about like what gut health is. So I'm super happy that you're here today to kind of talk to us a little bit more about it. But if you don't mind getting started with just giving us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, for sure. So I live in Vancouver, Canada, and I suffered from something called IBS or irritable bowel syndrome for about 12 years. And I had a pretty normal childhood. Like I grew up eating a lot of different like foods that, you know, I never really restricted anything, but I also grew up in, like my parents never said, oh, you can't have that or can't have that, this. So it kind of resulted in me eating things like Cinnamon Toast Crunch for breakfast and like Eggo waffles and white bread. And so I was that kid that was always complaining of an upset stomach. I can't even tell you like of a day or a week where I wasn't complaining about feeling in pain. So there was always something there. And I had a lot of different courses of antibiotics for ear infections and things like that. So as much as I really wanted to eat more veggies and be that kid that really, you know, felt better eating salads and veggies and things like that, I still ate a lot of those processed foods. And it wasn't until high school that I really started to get some pretty bad symptoms. And it was things like diarrhea, bloating, gas, like chronic pain and abdominal cramping, all that stuff. And it was really interfering with my daily life. Like I remember being in high school and thinking, oh my goodness, I don't even want to go out with friends because I don't really know if I'm going to have an attack or a flare up or whatever you want to call it. And I was always nervous about having the closest bathroom and stuff like that. And I felt really alone in this. Like, honestly, there wasn't a lot of people or like of my friend group or anyone even at my high school that was experiencing the same kind of thing. So I felt kind of confused and I was like, I don't know why this is happening to me, but okay, we'll go with it. And I saw a lot of different practitioners. I mean, between the time of high school and early university, I probably saw every type of practitioner under the sun. Honestly, like I saw nutritionists, dietitians, I saw GI specialists, I saw therapists because I thought it was all in my head. Yeah. I saw a homeopath. Like it was all the things. I was doing all the things, doing all the right things that you were supposed to be doing. And I'll never forget, like my favorite story is the one day I walked into a GI specialist's office and like my parents helped me pay for this privately because it was going to take 6 months to get into this GI specialist course. And it was just like, they didn't want to wait. So I walked in and it's this grumpy old man and he's like, what are you doing here? And I had to explain what my symptoms were. And I just remember feeling like, oh my God, this guy is not going to help me. Like he has no idea what I need. And I just remember feeling like I was being listened to, but not heard. He was like, oh, well, yeah, you probably have IBS. It's probably this and that. You can get a colonoscopy. And I'm thinking, I'm 21 years old and you're telling me I should be getting a colonoscopy. I thought that was something you got when you're 50.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, this is all wrong. He told me to take a fiber supplement, which I now know does really nothing in the grand scheme of things. He told me, to drink lactose-free milk, which obviously I'm plant-based now, so like I look back at that and laugh. And he told me, to take a really expensive probiotic and try out the low FODMAP diet and told me to Google it. For $900 an hour, this guy was telling me to Google the low FODMAP diet. And I couldn't believe it. So I walked out of there feeling totally defeated. And I remember just thinking, okay, there has to be more to this than that. And I kind of just let it go. And then in fourth year university, I decided to go plant-based. And it happened overnight. Like it was a really quick transition for me. So it was a really good experience and I did it for ethical and environmental reasons. I had no intention of helping my microbiome or my gut, which obviously I didn't even know of at the time. I didn't even know what a microbiome was.
Yeah.
So then, I went plant-based and then I slowly started to realize I was feeling better. Like fourth year. And then a couple years after university, I started to feel a lot better. And then I kind of wasn't sure why, but I went back to school for holistic nutrition because as I was transitioning to that vegan diet, I was like, okay, I really like this way of cooking. I like nutrition. I'm really interested in more about supplements and all these different things. So I went back to school at the Canadian School of Natural Nutrition and studied to be a holistic nutritionist. So I did a 180. I used to be in like real estate development. I did some time at a tech office. I worked at a marketing agency. So I did a big career change there. And then after school, I was like, oh, this makes so much more sense why I felt better eating vegan and why I do feel better eating vegan. So after that, I just dove headfirst into the research and on the microbiome and all that good stuff. And I started to realize why I was feeling that way and why I was, you know, feeling so much better than all my friends who, or sorry, not my friends, but a lot of people I was talking to. Because like I said, there's actually a lot of people who were experiencing those things. But online, there was like support groups. And everyone was like, oh yeah, I'm cutting out this food, cutting out that food. Yeah. And I'm getting, you know, I've had my second colonoscopy. And I was like, there's a reason why I was able to get by all that stuff and not actually have to do the low FODMAP diet and all these crazy restrictive diets and protocols and things. So
right.
It all started to make sense. And it was a pretty cool journey and not the way I'd planned it, obviously. But I'm so happy I found my answers. And now that I'm diving into the research more and more, now I'm able to help my clients because now I'm obviously a holistic nutritionist and yeah. I help women who are going through the same things that I went through so that they don't have to go down that wrong path. Because there's a lot of gut health experts out there yeah. who are preaching the wrong things yeah. and it just grinds my gears and I want to intervene in that in any way I can, pretty much.
Awesome. That's so awesome. But yeah. You said something before, you going plant-based was for, of course, ethical environmental reasons, which is awesome. But essentially, I mean, it seems like you made the switch overnight, which is essentially what I did. I essentially like went from eating chicken, turkey at all to like waking up the next day and eating absolutely nothing. But was there any, like when you made the switch, was there any research or kind of things that you came across leading up to that switch that kind of helped you make that switch? Or was it essentially just kind of going with the flow and learning from there?
Oh man, it was just going flying by the seat of my pants. I had no idea what I was doing at first. Yeah. Like I said, it was environmental ethical reasons. I didn't know how to cook vegan food. It was like right. one of those things where I was like, I think I should be eating this. And I don't even think I ate a lot of whole grains and legumes and beans when I first started. Mm-hmm. Not because I can't even remember if they made me feel gross. They probably did. Yeah. But I think, yeah, it was, there wasn't a lot of resources at first. As soon as I got into it, I realized, okay, I can't keep cooking like this. It tastes mm-hmm. like crap. I need to yeah. learn what I'm doing. Yeah. So I think I started watching it was Cowspiracy that helped me like make the jump over to the other side.
Right.
And then I just started looking into like blogs and stuff like that and recipes online. So it wasn't until after I made the switch that I really started to learn how to cook for myself.
Right.
Yeah, there wasn't really anything specific that helped me transition. I kind of just went head first and I was like, okay, so no meat, dairy. I mean, I guess I'll buy almond milk or whatever. And then, I had my boyfriend at the time, he was on board to switch with me. So we kind of did it together and he was a better cook than I was. So I think he helped me more at first. And then when we broke up, I was like, okay, no idea what I'm doing.
all on you now.
Yeah, exactly.
But was there anything, like any challenges that you faced? Like, I know... How long ago, sorry, did you make the switch? Because I know like when I made the switch, it was 6 or 7 years ago. And I know one of the main challenges for me was, like you mentioned before, there was like no resources, nothing. Like even going through the grocery stores, like you could maybe tofu and that's about it. Like there was not vegan sausages and burgers and like all of these products that you can get now. So were there any things that kind of stood out to you that made it really hard for you to switch at that time?
Oh yeah, it was definitely the grocery store. Like you said, I lived in Calgary, Alberta, which is meat and potatoes capital of Canada, I would say. Right. biggest meat producers, I'd say one of the biggest meat producers in Canada. So there was one vegetarian, like good vegetarian restaurant. And so I never ate out. And then, yeah, I think I was shopping at Safeway, which like Safeway has really not much now. Yeah. And then take that back 6 years ago was actually when I transitioned as well. Yeah. So definitely that was a huge one. But also my family like was a huge, I know like you probably weren't asking about that, but like that was honestly one of the biggest hurdles for me because no one wanted me to go plant-based. Literally no one.
Same here,
Yeah, it was like always the question of, oh my gosh, you're going to be nutrient deficient. You're going to, you know, you're going to go the wrong path and you're going to end up skin and bones. You're not going to eat anything. Like, why are you doing this? So I'd say, yeah, that was honestly the mental and emotional aspect for me was way far, far harder than learning how to cook because I'm a decent cook. I'm like, that's a huge part of what I do. And I've learned a lot since then, but I think it wasn't so much the learning how to pair foods. I figured that out pretty quickly just by diversifying my diet and trying new foods all the time. But it was, yeah, definitely the family aspect and the friends aspect of always being questioned for everything. My grandma still calls me a vegan. She still doesn't even know how to pronounce it.
I know. I think that's the hardest part is, you know, being surrounded with like, because I'm the same way. I'm the only plant-based and vegan person in my family, my group of friends and all that. So, I mean, of course, nowadays it's a lot easier because anytime you go out, like any restaurant that I go to or whatever has vegan options and has like a vegan menu or whatever. But back then having all these people be like, oh, well, like, why are you doing this? Like, and asking so many questions and then like trying to get around and be like, well, I'm just very curious on like, why are you doing this? Blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh mm-hmm. God, this is so redundant. I feel like a broke record talking about the same thing over and over and over again. Whereas now it's like, it's kind of like it's a norm in a sense. Yes. Like I don't get questions all the time, so it's a lot easier. But again, like back then it was so hard to make the switch. I think having that social support is super beneficial, which not everybody has. Yeah.
And people are curious too. Like people actually question, like they ask me questions now. They're like, oh, do you think this like the diet that you're following will help me with this? And I'm always like, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is nice to see that switch in their perspective too, rather than like accusing me. They're like, oh, I've heard about plant-based diets. I think that's a really cool thing you're doing.
Right. Okay, cool. So I'm interested now getting into a little bit more about kind of your gut health and maybe starting with kind of like your diagnosis of IBS and essentially when you got that diagnosis and when you were doing the research into gut health and things like that, what kind of led you to, I guess, differentiating all the research and coming to the conclusion that you needed to work on your gut health for it? Was there anything out there that kind of stood out? Because I know gut health is like such a broad term, right? So maybe let's get into started, if you don't mind, explaining to people listening what gut health essentially is or what the gut even is.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So when we're talking about gut health, we're essentially talking about the 38 trillion bacteria that live in and on our bodies. So they carpet almost all of our organs, well, all of our organs and our skin, and they live in our armpits and in our mouths, and we have so many different species of bacteria, and each different type of bacteria has a different role, but the majority of these bacteria live in our colon or our large intestine, or we can call it the gut. They're all they're all kind of the same thing,
right?
So the health of these bacteria are going to be really closely related to the health of our overall bodies, because everything comes back to the gut. Like 70% of our immune system, our immune cells live in the gut, they're bacterial cells. And we are only 1% human, essentially. So 99% of our genetic material is actually housed in these bacteria. And again, most of them are living in the gut. So you tell me like that we don't have control over our genes when we have control over the food that we eat every single day. So these bacteria, like I said, they have different roles. Some of them in our gut actually help process hormones. So if you are eating, again, if you're eating a poor diet and you are eating a lot of animal foods, a lot of saturated fat, a lot of processed foods, again, you are interacting with these microbes, this grouping of microbes that help process hormones that may contribute to imbalance there, right? And contribute to things like PMS. So, and then again, the immune system and cardiovascular health, it's all relating back to these microbes and their role in our overall picture of health. So the greatest predictor of a healthy microbiome is the diversity of plants you eat. And so we're starting to uncover that this, you know, grouping of bacteria, these trillions of bacteria, and most of them again are in the gut, they interact with the food that we eat and they actually help us break it down. So that's another role that some of these bacteria have, is they actually produce enzymes that help break down our fiber-rich plant foods, aka all plant foods, all whole plant foods. Yeah, so they break down the fiber and they produce something called short-chain fatty acids. And these short-chain fatty acids help reduce food sensitivities, help reduce inflammation. They're gonna optimize the immune system to communicate with that part of the body. And they do so many different things. They actually nourish the cells that line the intestinal layer. So they stop the onset of leaky gut or intestinal permeability, which is connected to allergies, autoimmune conditions, things like eczema, that kind of stuff. So everything comes back to the gut. And what we're seeing is that when we eat certain foods, such as saturated fat and animal foods, which are rich in saturated fat, processed foods, a lot of these foods are going to be increasing certain bacteria that are associated with things like inflammatory bowel disease, so and colorectal cancer. So they're seeing these patterns, and they're understanding that, okay, as we eat like 2,000 pounds of food a day, that is playing a huge role in whether or not we are seeing overall gut health, and our overall gut health translates to overall body health.
Right. Okay. That's super interesting. Yeah. A lot of that. I mean, like myself, like I'm saying, like I said before, sorry, I too, like a lot of listeners, probably like know what gut health is, or like scroll through Instagram and see like Instagram influencers talk about gut health and whatnot, but not actually know exactly like what the gut entails. And I had no idea about like all of the bacteria around the body. I just thought, it's the stomach and it's the intestine maybe. But yeah, that's super interesting. But I'm interested, like, where do people start? Like, if somebody is experiencing, let's say, they're having digestive problems or irritable bowel syndrome or something like that. Like, I know it's individualized and everybody kind of has to start at a different place, but the gut is involved in so much, like I just heard from you. So where do people start when they're going to try and tackle their gut health or improve their gut health?
Well, it depends on the diet that they're eating. Honestly, that's the first question is like, are you eating a whole food plant-based diet? Because that is the single best diet that you can follow for optimal gut health. I don't care what anyone has to say about bone broth. I don't care what anyone has to say about, you know, your organic lean chicken, whatever it is, right? It always comes down to the plants that you're eating. So first step is always to reduce animal foods, get the animal foods out, get the dairy out. Even the eggs and the seafood, like those again are rich in saturated fat and are going to be playing a role in changing the composition of your gut health. So that's always number one. Number two is going to be to diversify. That again is the single greatest predictor of a healthy microbiome, because the more diversity in our food choices, the more diversity in our bacteria, and the more diverse our microbiome is, the more resilient it is to pathogenic bacteria and all those different things. So a healthy microbiome is a diverse one. So you have to increase the diversity of foods you're eating. So that means you have to start eating as many different types of plant foods as you can over the course of a couple weeks or a month, right? Like, so every other, like every week you'd want to be swapping out things. So you're not eating the same 15, 20 foods, because if you're eating the same 15, 20 foods every single week and every single month, you're only going to be feeding those 15, 20 bacteria and the rest are just going to dwindle. They need to eat just like us. So we feed them. And when we don't, they actually disappear and die off in numbers. So it's all going to come down to a lot of these fiber-rich foods that you're eating. So whole grains, like diversify your whole grains, right? I always say, are you eating things like whole rye berries, whole spelt berries, whole wheat kernels? Because when people say they cut out gluten, I'm always like, well, what kind of gluten-containing foods were you eating? Probably processed foods, right? Yeah. So getting in your whole grains, like buckwheat and amaranth and teff and millet, like there's so many whole grains out there and they are super rich in soluble prebiotic fiber, which is what's going to be feeding these bacteria. Your legumes, you want to ramp those up as well. The more fiber, the better. And some of our ancestors used to eat 100 grams of fiber a day. I think most of us should be aiming for around 50 grams or more a day. I usually get between like 45 and 60 a day. And so that's like what you want to be aiming for. And then again, like getting in more of those other prebiotic rich foods. So these are the foods, again, that are going to feed these bacteria. So whole grains, legumes would fit under that umbrella as well. But cruciferous vegetables are another great place to start. So cabbage, cauliflower, bok choy, Brussels sprouts, these are amazing prebiotic-rich foods as well. But unfortunately, a lot of the times people come to me and they're like, well, Roz, these are the foods that I can't digest. And I'm like, oh, yes. Well, the reason why you can't digest them is because we have outsourced our microbiome to do that job for us. Right. So if you have damage, it's unfortunate that yes, these are the foods that you can't digest right now, but there's no way around it except for through it. You have to slowly start to reintroduce these foods if you want to obtain optimal gut health. So really what it comes down to is the foundations of your diet, how much fiber are you getting and how many different plant foods. Like next time you go to the grocery store, try a new plant food. Like if you see something that looks like a weird vegetable and you've never seen it before, try it, right? Yeah. Add it into your routine every once in a while and see how you like it. Try a new recipe with it. And that'll add a new type of plant in there that'll feed a different type of bacteria. So that's something that we can all do. And you have to slowly work your way up with the foods that are problematic for you. But that's the core of it. And then obviously your stress is going to play a huge role. Stress actually modulates the microbiome and the gut-brain connection is huge. But if you don't have a good foundation in your diet, it's going to be really important to work on that first. And of course, like processed foods, we really need to limit. Coconut oil is saturated fat, really not a health promoting food. So we don't even need that in the diet. And then anything with a package that has like a bunch of ingredients that you can't pronounce, we don't really need those every single day in our diet. Like, of course, like I love vegan ice cream, like just as much as the person next to me, but it's not something I eat every single day. I am a huge advocate for balance. But starting with the basics, like is 80% of your diet whole food plant-based? And then you can add in the 20% with whatever you want.
Okay. All right. Now I'm super interested in one of the points that you just made of how like people deal with kind of that upset stomach. Cause I know me personally, when I first became plant-based, for example. Even now, sometimes beans, for example, I could not eat like even chickpeas, like couldn't have them just because I would get bloated, I would get gassy, and my stomach just hurt after.
Yeah.
So I like tried researching, and I tried like some people online said, oh, well, buy the like dehydrated beans or whatever and then soak them and then cook them. Some people were like, no, have canned beans and this and that. Like, there's so many different things out there. And I like how you said slowly incorporate them, because that's what I slowly did and I slowly learned helped the best. But what are some other things, if anything, that people can do to help compensate for that? Because I know it can be hard, like, especially for someone like us who made the switch overnight.
Yeah.
Adding all of these new foods, like, can be a little bit shock to the system, I'm assuming. So is there anything people can do to kind of help that process?
Yeah, for sure. So you kind of named them. So actually the first piece of advice that you said was actually better advice than canned. So canned beans are fine, absolutely, for the average person if you have no issues with them. But if you're someone who's getting a lot of bloating and gas, yes, soaking and cooking from scratch will reduce something called phytic acid on the outside of all beans and legumes and whole grains. So that phytic acid is something that the plant uses to store its phosphorus, and a lot of different plants have it. And it's not problematic for us. It's not like an issue. It just can contribute to bloating and gas in some people. So the best way to get rid of that is actually to soak and then cook from scratch. It's also cheaper and more environmentally friendly to do it that way.
Yeah.
But that may not be that might not fix everything for you. So in that case, you can also sprout. So if you've ever grown sprouts, that's like lentil sprouts are going to be easier to digest than regular lentils are. But for cans, the phytic acid, you're kind of just like letting that, you're eating something that's like sitting in a bath of phytic acid, essentially, because they pressure cook the beans in the can, right? So any of the phytic acid is just going to be contained in that can because they pressure cook it in the can.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. Super interesting. So I would say definitely soaking and then cooking, but then also looking at your digestion, like, how strong is your digestion? We all have stomach acid. And if you talk to a doctor, they're going to be like, oh, stomach acid is bad. We don't want too much of it. But most doctors are actually misdiagnosing an underactive stomach, thinking it's an overactive stomach, which means underactive means you're not producing enough stomach acid. And like 90% of us are in that boat. It's not the opposite, because stress actually dampens digestion. So most of us are chronically stressed. Like, I think you'd be hard pressed to find someone in 2020 who's not chronically stressed. So looking at your digestion is going to be really key. So are you chewing your food? Chewing your food actually increases stomach acid production. And we need stomach acid to physically and chemically break down our food to prepare it for the next stage of digestion. So if we don't have enough stomach acid levels, we aren't activating the right enzymes, because that's something that it does. It activates pepsin for breaking down protein. We're not stimulating peristalsis, which is the wave-like motion that helps move things down the intestinal system and the small intestine. So that's not going to be working properly, and a number of other things. So are you chewing properly? What are your stomach acid levels looking like? You can do some like an at-home baking soda test to check that out. But working with a practitioner is also going to be really important at this point. But I'd say looking at stress and definitely chewing. And are you chugging water at meals? A lot of people don't realize that they're drinking a ton of water at meals, and this is actually diluting their digestive juices. So it's making, it's just like basically, diluting the process of digestion, which is not what we want. But definitely going back to the basics is going to be really important, but working your way up is like the most important thing I could ever say. So what is your threshold right now, and work your way up from there? So how many chickpeas can you eat right now without getting like super bloated and gassy? Yeah. And then slowly work your way up from there, like every week. And you should start to be able to digest them and tolerate them over time. You just have to be slow.
Okay. That's awesome. Yeah. I didn't know a lot of that, like, especially the can things, how they're pressurized in the can and the acids and stuff. Awesome. Wow. That was cool. What essentially now, another point that you said recently was products. Like, of course, you want to balance and you want to eat as much whole foods as possible. I totally agree with all of that as well. But now in 2020, like we mentioned before, things are a lot easier and a lot simpler now, in the sense of going to a grocery store and having like aisles of vegan products or plant-based friendly products. So when somebody is going through a grocery store, how can they differentiate between what maybe is good for them, what's bad for them? Because I personally think there's still this misconception that, you know, you go through a grocery store and somebody sees a label saying this is plant-based or this is vegan, and them automatically associating that with health and them thinking, oh yeah, well, this is better than the next product that isn't vegan, which is not always the case, especially now there being so many products out there, which again is great for people trying to transition and whatnot. But how do people... like when you go through the grocery store, for example, how do people kind of differentiate between what's good, what's not good, what's bad, what they should purchase?
For sure. So I'd say first off, look at the label. And if it says anything like natural, 100% natural or whatever like that, that's actually just a false marketing claim. Like there's nothing to hold them accountable for that. It doesn't really mean anything. And plant-based, obviously, there's going to be no animal products in there, which is great. But now you have to look at the label and say, okay, is there a bunch of ingredients in here that I cannot pronounce? Like there's going to be a lot of things. If you can't pronounce it, it's not going to be good for you probably. And if you don't know what it is, definitely do your research. So I'd say go for as whole food based as possible. I know that sounds so simple, but some packaged foods are still going to have mostly whole. Some of them are the good ones are going to have mostly whole foods in them. And you'll know exactly what the ingredients are. You'll know how to pronounce them. You'll know what they are. And every once in a while you'll find things like citric acid or soy lecithin or whatever those things, like those types of things that are added in, which aren't the biggest deal, but the things we really don't want to be going near are going to be anything with numbers, anything with like that, with that are have lengthy names. Just go back to whole foods. Like even like some crackers I'm finding now are just literally whole foods in, and they're made into crackers from like seeds and simple whole grains and things like that. So anything that has is whole food based, even if there is 10 ingredients, it's okay as long as they're mostly whole foods, if that makes sense.
Okay. All right. Okay, cool. So I'm also interested in when we're cooking, for example. I know I did an episode a couple weeks ago with Brittany, who is also another holistic nutritionist, and she mentioned something about eating kind of like raw foods versus cooked foods and that being different for the gut. And I didn't get the chance to ask her a little bit more about that, but I've also heard that. I've heard that if you cook your foods, that does something different to your gut or your body processes it a little bit different. Do you know anything about that? Is that kind of a statement that has truth behind it or
So that's an interesting one. There's pros and cons. Like I've learned pros and cons to both. So raw foods are amazing because they contain more enzymes. Like when the cooking process technically destroys a lot of the enzymes in our food, which is not a bad thing because we still produce enzymes to help break them down. And when you're cooking the food, you're actually pre-digesting it in a way, right? You're doing a lot of the work because you're breaking down a lot of those harsher fibers. So for the average person, I'm a huge advocate for cooked foods when it comes to gut health, because a lot of us are really not breaking down our food the way we should be because we have low stomach acid due to stress, because we're not chewing our food as well. Sometimes we're eating in a distracted environment. So cooked foods are going to be easier to digest. So they're going to end up in the intestinal system more fully digested, which is going to be less inflammatory. If you eat raw foods, that's amazing. Like again, raw foods contain a lot more nutrients. Like for example, vitamin C can be killed off, really destroyed in the cooking process. So if you're cooking something that is rich in vitamin C, of course, yeah, you're going to lose some of that vitamin C. But if you're eating that raw food and you're not digesting it properly, and undigested food particles end up making their way into your intestinal tract, it's going to be contributing to a lot of inflammation, right? You can imagine like that's how like things would get a little bit pissed off down there, and those undigested food particles could wreak some havoc. But, you know, that being said, there's going to be a balance for everyone. So it depends on the person. I do enjoy raw foods. I usually stay away from a lot of like rough raw vegetables, like kale. Like I still eat kale, obviously, but I massage my kale if I'm making it into a salad. Celery, I make sure I'm chewing really well. And raw broccoli, I'm not as much of a fan of. I like cooking my broccoli. Those types of things are going to be rougher. And we don't want that inflammation if you're not digesting those foods as well, because it can, piss off the gut lining and contribute to things like intestinal permeability over time, if that makes sense. So again, making sure that you're chewing really, really well if you are eating raw foods is going to be really important. Your food should be the consistency of like baby food when you swallow.
Right. Okay. And that's super interesting, because I'm assuming like if somebody listening is like myself, for example, an athlete, like we go through a lot of inflammation already. So having internal inflammation probably isn't the greatest to add to everything. So that, that's a super interesting point there. But essentially now, I'm interested in getting into like probiotics because I know that's a huge thing. I know I personally, when I started working on my gut health, I was instructed by a naturopath that I was seeing at the time to take a probiotic just for 30 days, just when I was getting everything started. And I personally think it helped, but I don't really take them anymore. But I remember at the time going through the grocery store, I remember going through Whole Foods, going through like the refrigeration section, and there were so many choices. There were like ones that were $60 versus ones that were like $15 and this and that. But maybe do you mind getting started on speaking a little bit what the probiotic supplements are?
Yeah, for sure. So probiotics are a funny one because they've exploded in the last like 5 years and like 99.9% of them are not doing what they say they're doing or they're just not researched. So this is my problem with probiotics. I love probiotics. I love that this is a niche that is exploding. But again, you have to choose your product wisely because most of them are not backed by any research and they're not third party tested or anything like that. They're not held to a specific standard. So you can walk down the aisle, find a shampoo and it'll say probiotic rich shampoo, right? Yeah. The word is being thrown around like no other and that's fine, but you, for the consumer, it's really, really confusing. So what makes a probiotic a good one from a bad one or not, or just one that's not doing what it says it's going to do? It's going to be research. Like it always comes back to the research. So are they doing double blind, placebo controlled human clinical research trials to show that the specific strains, so even more specific than the bacteria species, but the strain itself. So the strain will have a number attached to it. It's a very, very specific thing. Is that strain, are they studying it? And they're showing that it'll do a specific thing in the body on that area of health that they're looking at. And so they have to be studying that and testing that on humans. Right. And most people are not doing any research. They're just, you know, adding their bacteria to a capsule and hoping that it makes its way to the intestine. And that's something else that they should be looking at. They should be doing human GI tract simulation models to show that the bacteria in that capsule are actually making their way to your intestine. So bacteria are in a probiotic are supposed to be transient, which means that they're supposed to do their work on the road. A lot of people think that bacteria, probiotics are supposed to colonize in the gut. But that's actually not true. They don't make home. They do their work on the road and they are supposed to interact with your native bacteria species. So a lot of people express concern over, oh, I don't want to disrupt my native, you know, gut flora. You're not actually going to be doing that. If it's a good probiotic, it will be doing its work on the road. It'll be transient. And another couple of myths would be, oh yeah, if it's not refrigerated, it's not good. That's completely false because if it can't withstand the temperature of the air in the room, how is it going to withstand the temperature of your 30 some odd degree body and your stomach acid? Like both of those things are going to destroy the bacteria.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So again, that's where the human GI tract simulation models should come into play. They should literally be testing how that bacteria capsule, or sorry, probiotic capsule, I keep saying bacteria, how that probiotic capsule makes its way to your intestine, right? So, and then the last myth would be colony forming units. The more, the better. Really, that doesn't matter at all if it hasn't been tested, right? So they have to be testing the specific number of CFUs or colony forming units or the number of bacteria in that capsule, in that probiotic, for that to be even useful at all. So if it says 100 billion CFU in that probiotic on the package, but they haven't tested it on on you or and on a specific area of health, then how does that even matter, right? More is not necessarily better, especially when it comes to anything in health.
Yeah, because that's always interesting because I know like that most recent point, like 100 billion versus like 500 and this and that, like I wasn't ever sure exactly what any of that meant. But what about like prices, for example? Like is in probiotics doing all these testings and whatnot, does that equate to a higher price or can you find one at a decent price in your experience that has all of these things that you mentioned?
For sure. So to my knowledge, there's only one company out there who's actually doing all this research. And that's why, and they're working to bring a lot of regulation to this industry because there really isn't. I would say that yes, that does equate to a higher price point, but you can, I'm not discouraging anyone from experimenting with other probiotics. Like you can absolutely do that. And I have clients that will try other brands and they'll still get results because they can't get their hands on the one that I recommend. And that's totally fine. And they still might see results and they sometimes they do. And that's amazing. But again, like if you're not wanting to throw your money around, sometimes it's better to just hit the bullseye the first time around and know what you're getting with a quality probiotic. So the one that I buy is about $55 a month. So it's expensive. Like it's not cheap. I've actually just stopped it because I feel like I don't really need it anymore. But and that's just something else, is that you probably shouldn't be taking probiotics for the rest of your life. There's a time and a place for them. And if you need that extra support in your gut, absolutely go for it and take them for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 months, whatever you need. But then, go back to your diet and always ask yourself, is my diet doing what it should be in my body? Or am I supplying my body with the right foods? Or am I relying on getting, you know, the help from a probiotic?
Right. Okay. Yeah. And that's super interesting because I wanted to get into that as well. I know like we shouldn't probably be telling anybody if they should or shouldn't be taking probiotics, but essentially, why would people want to take a probiotic? So if somebody's coming to you and they're asking and they've heard from their doctor that they need to take a probiotic or this and that, what are some common reasons people take probiotics?
Oh, for everything.
Really?
Okay. Honestly, there's a lot of things that people come to me and they're like, oh, I should probably be taking a probiotic, or I have been taking a probiotic. Yeah. Again, this goes back to the concept of, you know, probiotics are marketed for every condition under the sun now, which is fine. But a lot of people, it's usually for gut health things. It's usually going to be almost always going to be for constipation, diarrhea, bloating, and gas. Those would be like the top four things. Something else would be like leaky gut. Some people are say, oh, I've been diagnosed with leaky gut and I feel like I need a probiotic for that. So, but I'd say it's almost always going back to, you know, the diarrhea, the chronic diarrhea, bloating, gas, or constipation.
Right.
People
okay.
think that it'll help them have regular bowel movements.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Cause that's what I thought too. I thought it was, well, I mean, personally, I thought it was only like the digestion side of it, but yeah, that's interesting that it's for everybody, or it can be for everything.
Well, yeah, for sure. Well, it's actually, cause I was going to say, digestion less so, because you would want to be taking things like digestive enzymes or digestive bitters if you wanted to actually help your digestion. But then if you want to be working on your intestinal system and the bacteria, which is what, you know, that's why you're delivering those bacteria so they can interact with your other microbes, that would be more intestinal function there. But honestly, there's probiotics for, there's people who have marketed probiotics for like, hormone balancing and autism and stuff like that. It's crazy. Like it's everything.
Yeah. Okay. Now I know we mentioned a few things before, such as like animal foods and stress and all that, but is there anything else that people need to be aware of throughout their daily lives that may be damaging their gut health? Is there anything that people should be kind of being aware of and maybe trying to make changes?
Yeah, for sure. I'd say like top two things that come to mind right now would be, things like Advil or ibuprofen, so non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. A lot of people take these on like the daily, like or every week or whatever, for migraines, headaches, cramps, you name it. That's actually going to be damaging your microbiome, so that is not something that we want to be taking weekly or even monthly. Like I try and avoid Advil at all costs because we know exactly what it does to the gut and it damages the gut. I'd say other than that, my the second one would be water. Right, the quality of your water is so important. There's hidden everything in our water, right? Like pharmaceuticals, antibiotics, they can all make their way into our water systems via leaching. And we don't want that. And there's also chlorine in our water, which is, we need the chlorine to treat bacteria, right? So that we don't get infected by our water and anything lurking in there. But at the same time, that chlorine, if it's killing off microorganisms that could be harmful, it may also be killing off microorganisms that are our own and they're helpful for us and our native bacteria. So we really don't want to be drinking tap water. I mean, okay, so I will say, like, I drink tap water my entire life, but if you can get a filter, it's totally fine. Or it's way better, actually, to try and do that because, you're filtering out the chlorine, you're filtering out any of the heavy metals, the pharmaceuticals, the antibiotics, any of these things, right? So that would be something that's really important and is an everyday thing, and you don't realize how much water you drink and it adds up really quickly. And the last thing that I would say is really being cognizant of why your doctor is recommending antibiotics, because they're so overprescribed. I think I took 20 rounds of antibiotics in my first 20 years of life, which is terrifying. And every time we take a round of antibiotics, it wipes out around 35% of our native bacteria species. And we know that diversity is what we need for a healthy microbiome. So it's antibiotic resistance is a real thing and a real threat that's kind of coming down the pipeline for us. So I would always encourage you to ask your doctor, okay, so why am I getting these? Do I need them yet? Sometimes like doctors will prescribe antibiotics before you even get your test results back for something. So for example, for a lot of girls, they'll get tested for a UTI, but sometimes mm-hmm. doctors will be like, oh, well, just in case you do have a UTI, you should start taking these right away and we'll wait for your results. No, wait till right. you get your results and yeah. then take the antibiotic, right? So I think that's something else that you need to be your own health advocate for.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's super interesting, especially like, yeah, I know medications are huge and everybody like to listen to their doctors, but sometimes I think, you know, you have a voice, and if you are wary of something, then definitely listen to your gut essentially. But essentially now, I know we were talking about like probiotics, we talked about plant-based foods and all of that, but is there any foods at the top of your head that essentially help with your gut? So if somebody is coming and wants to see you, or if somebody's researching and doesn't have, I guess, funds to like go out and get a probiotic or get all of these fancy things, are there any, I guess, budget-friendly foods that really help flourish your gut?
Yeah. So I know a lot of people are probably going to sit here like waiting for me to say that this superfood or that superfood yeah. or the other superfood. It always comes back down to basics. So right. go toward your fiber superstars, your soluble fiber superstars, which would be your whole grains and your
right.
legumes.
Right.
Sprouts are another thing. Sprouts are so cheap. You can grow them yourself.
Yeah, okay.
You don't even need to go buy them. If you mm-hmm. buy sprouting seeds, I bought some at my local like Garden Works, which is a garden store, and it was right. like $4 for a Yeah, and there's probably like, I don't even know, like a cup of sprouting seeds in there, and I only yeah. need a tablespoon at a time to grow a whole mason jar of 500 ml mason jar of sprouts.
Right.
And sprouts contain a lot of soluble fiber. Broccoli sprouts have more antioxidants than any other plant food in the entire world. Yeah, so sprouts would be a really good one. Just go back to your legumes and your beans and your whole grains, and your cruciferous vegetables. Again, like I know everyone's waiting for the next like big yeah. thing that's going to heal your gut, but it's always about the basics of your diet. Like, how much fiber are you getting a day, and how many different soluble fiber rich foods are you getting in each meal and throughout the day? It's really important to take a look at that. But I would say sprouts are like the hidden gem of the plant world, that if you're going to do anything, start growing your own sprouts, especially broccoli sprouts. But there's tons of different varieties that allow you to get in more plant-based diversity. Like, I think I had a sandwich booster mix the other day that had clove, it had radish sprouts, mustard seed sprouts, and yeah, clove sprouts. It was awesome.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Now, like, there's so much information out there, especially nowadays with social media and things like that. Are there any places that you recommend people go and visit if they want to learn more about gut health, or if they're wanting to essentially work on their gut health? Is there anything that you've come across over the years that have really helped you, or that help your clients, or resources in that sense?
Yeah, for sure. Some of my favorite like gut health guru people are number one, Dr. Will Bolsiewicz. He's the author of Fiber Fueled. Absolutely Fiber Fueled. I love everything he's doing, and a lot of what I practice and preach is aligned with what he does as well.
Right.
I say like he'd be a top resource to look into. And also Dr. Greger, he's got a list of like Daily Dozen. I'm sure you've heard of Dr. Greger, but yeah. he's all about the science. I'm alongside of anyone yeah. who wants to lean into research. I say those are two really, really good places to start. With Dr. Greger's Daily Dozen, yeah, he lists off all the different foods that you should be eating every day. Yeah, I mean, there really isn't, the problem is like, honestly, there's so much misinformation out there.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I didn't have a lot of resources and I had to do a lot of my own research. And mm-hmm. while people like Dr. B were a huge inspiration to me,
yeah.
really there wasn't a lot else, like other, a lot of really reputable information out there that I could turn to. So I'd say if you're going to go listen to anyone when they talk about gut health, just ask where their research is, ask where
right.
they're getting that information from before you believe them. But yeah, I mean, there's the problem is, again, it's super saturated with a lot of misinformation on social media. So you're going to come across a
yeah.
lot of posts and a lot of claims about gut health. Ask where the information is coming from. But I would say, yeah, Dr. B and Dr. Greger are amazing resources to look to.
Okay, awesome. Is there anything like, or any phrases or anything that you've come across that you generally want to recommend to like stay away from? Because again, like you said, there's so much misinformation and there's so many posts now about health in general, but is there anything that people or that you want to stay away from when you're doing this research?
Oh, yeah. Anyone who's recommending you go for supplements before you go for food, anyone who's telling you to stay away from beans and legumes and whole grains or even gluten, like some people definitely need to avoid gluten if they're celiac, for example, but if they're telling you, oh, you have to eliminate gluten to be healthy or to have a healthy gut, or you need to eliminate this food. I honestly, when it comes to just like elimination of plants, like steer clear. Anyone who's trying to tell you that you need to cut out foods, it should be about radical abundance of plants. It should never be about extreme deprivation or categorical elimination. Never.
Right. Okay.
So I'd say run far away from anyone who tells you that certain plant foods are inflammatory. Mm-hmm. And that you should cut out X, Y, and Z in order to achieve optimal gut health. Like, I think that's like the leading dialogue that I'm seeing in the online space when it comes to health food or gut health, is that people are saying, yeah, that these foods are inflammatory. Like these plant foods are not good for you. They're going to ruin your gut lining and all this stuff. So, steer clear of that if at all possible is what I would say.
Right. Okay. Awesome. Now, and of course you help a lot of people. You're a holistic nutritionist and you have your business and a podcast coming, I hear. So, where can people find you? Do you have Instagram, website, your podcast name, all of that? Go ahead and plug all of that in.
Yeah, for sure. So I am at Plants First Nutrition on Instagram. I have a really great free Facebook group, The Plant-Based Solution. You can just search that on Facebook. And then my podcast is going to be called The Plant-Powered Gut Show. So that's like the main places you can find me. I'm frequent Instagram and my Facebook group most often. So you'll find me there. And yeah, the Facebook group is open to anyone who's struggling with intestinal imbalances such as IBS or any of those symptoms that we've talked about in the show. So yeah. Great place to come and be and learn and explore new things.
Awesome. Okay, cool. So I thank you so much for being on the show today and for taking the time.
Me.
Yeah, this was so informative. Like I mentioned before, I have been so interested in gut health and have done some research, not a lot in the past. Most of my research has come from like the practitioners that I've seen for my gut health, but it's like, it's so hard to differentiate all the information out there. And I think you did an amazing job of explaining it all. Cause I took out a lot and I hope all of you listeners took out a lot, from today. So thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Jordan. This has been great. I really hope that everyone took something away from this.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. That is it. And I'm so happy that part one of the Plant-Based Strong series is now out and that you guys have all listened. Now, be sure to head to the show notes below to check out all of Rosalind's links. You can check out her Instagram, her Facebook group. It all will be there. She is also going to be having a 4-day plant-powered gut workshop event that will help you transform your gut microbiome with plant-based nutrition, evidence-based practice, and so much more. So the link to sign up to that free workshop will be in the show notes below. I believe it is going on in November. You can get all the information off of that link there. So thank you all again for listening to this week's episode and the very first episode of the Plant-Based Strong series. And I will talk to you all next week.